Hello and welcome to Horrorsperia. My name is May.
And I'm Clinton, aka Scary Clint, and sometimes known as Scared D Clint.
Yeah, and today we're going to be looking at the nation state and horror films, or nationalism within horror films. How are you this week?
Oh, geez. I'm doing okay. But we've had, a tough couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much do you want to talk about?
No, it's fine. By the time this comes out, people will know that my cat died. But, it's great. It's easily the worst thing in the world that happened to me easily. And I've been to grad school. It's funny. I was talking to someone the other day and I was like, I would rather go to grad school like for 10 years straight than have that happen. But, Clinton is probably...
So I'm guessing I shouldn't go to grad school, is that what you're saying?
I didn't sleep the last year, but...
Okay.
Yeah, no, Clinton just pulled through in such a way that I have never expected, so I thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you
for I don't want to cry.
All right.
But I love you very much.
Oh my gosh, so... I love you too. I wasn't expecting... I'm glad we're doing this.
As we all say, the show must go on.
Yes.
I think I did a nice tribute to her. We have done our best. Uh-huh. And I think it is time to keep the Horrorsperia flag going. And
yes,
we might have some new listeners. So.
And where would they be from?
So we just got a blast out from Washington's Women in Film and TV.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Melissa, if you're listening. And everyone, honestly, that, this podcast grows little by little every day. Clinton and I have very different things that we're constantly doing, but this always brings us back. And we really are best friends outside of the pod. He is my best friend here. But it's really nice just to see how this grows and to be able to share the good things that we find, I think.
Yeah. And some bad things too. For sure. Yeah.
This is a very interesting episode. Yeah. I think I think all of these films are really dense.
Uh-huh.
Whether you like them or not.
Yeah.
And so.
And they're the nation state, which is like a dun 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 dun.
Yeah, especially all of these films were weirdly kind of made before I don't want to sound naive and say that the world has ever been okay.
Yeah.
Obama administration did a lot of bad stuff. Other countries have been doing a lot of bad stuff. But I think the global peak of a lot of narcissism, well, not narcissism, sorry, a lot of like negativity and a lot of just like how much more of this can we take kind of culminated at the end of 2016, which is before a lot of these films were made.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them resonate a lot now. And I mean, a lot of them just prove that nationalism and how it appears in horror films, especially, and in all media, how media is very complicit, especially the film industry, in supporting those ideas or dissecting them at least. And that's something that I wanted to really go through with these films, from three very different countries, and see how it manifests.
Great. I'm excited for that because when I was watching it, it wasn't when I heard that we were doing the podcast on nationalism, I thought it was going to be a little more like over the top propaganda, So I'm curious to know what your breakdown's going to be, what you're going to teach us today,
It'll be very interesting, I think. I think I mentioned this before, I got this inspiration looking up Latin American films because there's a lot of nationalism tones to them. We're not going to talk about it, but I did make you see The Devil's Backbone. And there was not a lot of nationalist tones to that.
There was or was not?
There was.
And that's Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro, it's very complex because it's a Mexican and Spanish production.
Right.
And it kind of looks at that dichotomy in and of itself, which is a very complicated...
Really?
Yeah, which is a very complicated dichotomy to speak of anyway, because that's a colonizer and the colonized, mm-hmm. even though a lot of, you know, you get a lot, this is where you get into a lot of dicey political analysis and political discourse, because some people can be proud of that, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird in my opinion, especially as a Latin American. And then some people are like, this is, you know, why keep such a strong relationship?
Yeah.
Now,
Guillermo del Toro is, what's his background? Is he from Mexico?
Yeah, he's Mexican. He's okay. Mexican. He's privileged Mexican, but he's okay. Mexican.
I did think it was interesting, and it made me think of something we've talked about before, which is that, was this his first movie? Or
no,
his first?
Carnos is his first.
Okay. That kind of blows up my thesis. But I was thinking, if this is one of his first films, like we talked about how it's about the Spanish Civil War. It's about Spain. It's not about Mexico. Like, he's from Mexico, so I'm going to make a film of Mexico. It seemed like he might have done what we were talking about, which is make a movie somewhere else.
No, and like I said, the fact that it's a Spanish production obviously also influences it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't think things are as, how would I say, like, contentious, maybe, uh-huh. between the two countries.
Spain and Mexico.
But in ways that it might have been before. I think it's more of a symbiotic relationship now. But granted, that's not to say that their legacy isn't damaging, because it is, you know, it's the basis of racism, and especially against indigenous people in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if we're frank, Guillermo del Toro isn't an indigenous Mexican, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that film, and we cut it for different reasons, but it's a really good example of showing, like, because also at the end of the day, I think you also look at The Devil's Backbone, and it's just like a ghost story, right?
Yeah,
but there's a lot more going on to it. And that's to say for these other three films. So we're going to be looking at Red State, mm-hmm. which is from America, The Wailing, which is from South Korea, and Under the Shadow, which is from Iran. But I did kind of put together a 60-second countdown.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we can do that.
Well, let me get my phone out here. And as I'm getting my phone out, I'm just going to tease the listeners. On today's episode, one of these movies is the scariest movie I've seen in my adult life.
You know, I told Delia that you said that, and she called you a vulgar word.
Oh! What does it start with? Can you not say it on the air?
It's
not appropriate.
Yeah, you never know. We're classy people.
We're classy. Okay, well, Delia said that?
Delia's my best friend, for those that don't, and she's Iranian, so.
Oh, she is. Oh, okay.
You knew that.
I did, but I forgot. All right, you ready?
Okay, yeah.
Go.
All right, so the definition of a horror film that we especially have gone on through this podcast is that the horror genre is a way of projecting culture's anxieties. And I think the biggest threat to a culture often is the strip of its national identity, which brings to a rise of nationalism. So nationalism has always been very present in the cinematic industry from the very start. For example, in America, Birth of a Nation was one of the very first films that was made, and it's an openly racist, openly horrific film about how Black people are savages and how the Ku Klux Klan must exterminate them all. And this was screened at the White House the year was released. And so we consider that a horror film, especially within the Black community, because of what it inhabits. And the thing is, that kind of metaphor is happening all across.
60 okay. seconds, yeah. So.
Yeah, I
you went
I
deep. You started.
Birth at I the teach beginning it in of my time. Class. No, yeah.
Not yeah, yeah. But Birth of a Nation, that's a huge one.
Yeah, Birth of a Nation is a huge. Yeah, and I mean, it's funny. When I went to film school, mm-hmm. I know that they didn't teach Birth of a Nation as, like, this horror film. They were like, yeah, it's one of the first films. Let's watch a bit of it.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of horrifying.
And it's like, oh, it's the first one to Zoom or whatever.
Yeah, it was like it was like the first major epic for American films.
And one of the first, like, technique-wise, like, they used a couple of techniques.
Yeah, no, it's like one of the very first.
And the president at the time was like, this is great.
I think Woodrow Wilson was the president.
This is the truth or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, especially through a Black critic's eye,
uh-huh.
it's one of the most horrific films that has ever been made. It's a, what I teach it as, a blacks in horror film. So one day we're going to do a black horror podcast.
Okay.
But there's two different types of black horror films, quote unquote. There's black horror films, which black horror films are films made by black people, starring black people. Mm-hmm. And then there's blacks in horror, which is usually white directors, non-white directors, but Hello, black Ma, characters.
The show, the movie Ma.
Literally, Ma is a very good example of a blacks in horror film.
In theaters now. Someone actually stole, I just found out today, someone ordered tickets to go see Ma on my account in New York today. I had to cancel it.
How,
I feel a little
bad. How does
that
happen?
They ordered two tickets. So
how
I feel like,
steal your
I feel
account?
Like I ruined someone's date night. But,
yeah, but
it was a thief.
Your...
You know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Also, it's a racist film. So.
Yeah. Maybe it's better that they chose me.
What?
And I denied
that. How does that even work? How do they?
I don't know. They hacked it, you know?
Oh, that's creepy. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't
like it either. Anyway, so we would consider Birth of a Nation as one of the first blacks in horror film because it's other, usually blacks in horror films.
So that's that other category.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's really, that's probably the most important thing I should have mentioned in the countdown is that the way that nationalism shows up in these films, especially one of these is a pretty explicit allegory. Red State, I think, is pretty like straightforward. Mm-hmm. It's probably the most straightforward of all of these films. But usually when we're talking about othering and nationalism in horror films, it's through the metaphor of the ghost, really, or the metaphor of whatever the villain is. So I mean, in Ma, she's the kind of mammy stereotype, but they don't, you know, they try to bill it as a subversion of it, but they don't. They still
you can't
make her...
subvert if you're a white guy writing,
especially
it,
the white
guy
that made the Help.
The Help,
you know,
like
a film that perfectly is an example of what's wrong when white saviors make films.
Yeah, and you're kind of there's also this weird taste in your mouth when you see from the producers of Us. It makes me think that they saw Us and they were
exactly
like, okay, great. We can do that. You know, let's just do that.
I think you're actually saying one of my tweets verbatim when Ma came out and I always didn't trust him. So
the director?
I think his name is Tate Taylor. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can't trust Tate Taylor. That's like Tim the Tool Man Taylor.
Yeah. No, too much. Yeah. When it was first announced, I always look to who helms films.
Who helms films. Okay.
And as soon as I saw his credits, I didn't trust it.
Yeah.
A lot of the community was very excited. I wanted to be excited, but I was like, I don't trust.
It's like
directors.
I'm sure that who's the actress, the lead actress in that?
Octavia Spencer.
I'm sure she's great. I'm sure it's awesome in her, everything she brings to it.
I like Octavia Spencer, but she's also very defensive of like The Help and things And I mean, it's an uncomfortable thing to kind of almost talk about. Like, there definitely are people that kind of enable, you know, because a guy like that thinks of an idea, probably Octavia Spencer is one of his best friends. They remain very close.
Yeah.
And
so he's not racist. Case closed.
Exactly. You see what I mean? Yeah. I think he even gave an interview where he was like, oh, clearly, you know, this is
a racist person.
Literally.
Yeah.
And one of the tweets, like exactly like you said, you know, just because Jordan Peele's success was monumental. And it created, for the first time, black horror had an elevated status, which had never happened before. But Jordan Peele made that possible. But because of that, you get a lot of films like Ma, another film that was horrific, actually, that I actually almost hate more than Ma, was The Perfection.
Oh, have you watched that?
I did.
I
was very excited because it looked very good.
Yeah.
But I made the cardinal mistake of not looking up who made it.
Who's the helm?
Yeah, exactly. And so...
Who is the helm?
I don't remember his name.
Because this is a brand new, like, on Netflix.
Right, yeah. But it's a white director. It's a white straight director.
Okay.
And just like he even when he gives interviews about the perfection, he's like, yeah, I was super influenced by Park Chan-wook and super influenced by Jordan Peele. And you hear that and then think of a white director that just has watched those two films and then thinks, oh, I know everything about this genre. I'm going to write a story. It was
Is it lesbian?
Yeah.
Like there's a romantic.
It's horrific.
I think, you know.
And it was so porny. Yeah. It was
in a good way or a bad way.
I mean, I guess
it doesn't really belong, given the trailer.
It was bad. It was just really, like I said, I stopped watching it because it was so bad.
That's like you know, diversity in film.
No, yeah.
But not exactly the kind we actually want.
You get these, a lot of projects are being greenlit right now, but what they're not paying attention to is who's behind the camera.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, okay, black people in film now style. They're hot. Yeah, they're hot. Lesbians in film. Oh, yeah, they're hot.
Right, that's, yeah.
And so we're going to go ahead and still write it ourselves.
And, like, and then who made that other movie that we funded? Yeah, okay, let's get that guy again.
Yeah, no. And I mean, the producers of Us and the actual production companies behind Us and Get Out are Jason Blum. I mean, that's a white guy.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it's not that there can't be white people involved.
Right.
But when you're trying to write black stories and it's through a white writer or a white director,
mm-hmm.
you are not getting it. You know, you're
going to misfire. I think the LGBTQ is the same. Like I just.
No, same.
No way. When I saw the trailer for The Perfectionist.
Yeah.
I think was what's called.
I think it's The Perfection.
The Perfection.
Yeah.
I assumed and I hoped that it was from an LGBTQ.
The
fact that it's not makes me go, gosh, you know,
I knew within 5 minutes because the speed up to the lesbians, it was so non-existent. It was literally like a porn.
Yikes.
It was so non-existent. And then it really gets me mad when a guy name checks something like The Handmaiden.
Uh-huh.
Because Park Chan-wook isn't...
The Handmaiden.
Yeah, which is by Park Chan-wook.
Okay.
Park Chan-wook isn't gay, but the person who wrote The Handmaiden is. She's a lesbian. And she worked with him on, you know, getting that film. And that film is a masterpiece. I've told you before. It's one of my favorite films.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see this guy like name check these things and then just see it completely miss the mark.
Yeah.
Like the only things that have it similar are the elements, you know, it's essentially being like, I can take ownership of these elements. And so, you know, we're kind of talking about that in American nationalism through a perspective, but you know, we're going to talk about how it looks like from a South Korean perspective and their relationship with the Japanese. And then we're also going to look at it from the Iranian perspective and their very unique history. And so nationalism arises through these other rings, you know? And so that is something that is going to come up all the time. And I mean, some more examples of nationalist films. Did you ever see Green Room?
Yes.
Yeah, so Green Room, the kind of the whole neo-Nazi allegory and the home invasion allegory, that was a really good example. The Purge is a pretty direct example.
Hmm. Go ahead. Do you have another one?
I was just going to mention The Witch, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which also
The Witch?
Yeah.
See, I guess when I think of nationalism, I get why... what was the first movie you mentioned?
Green Room?
No. In your 60
Birth
second.
Birth of a Nation?
Birth of a Nation. I get... So that one's an obvious one to me because it's propaganda, right?
Right.
It's... So I don't get quite so much in some of these other ones.
Well, why did the... So you saw The
Like,
Witch.
Let's say The Purge.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it just...
Did you see all of The Purge films?
I've seen most of The Purge films.
Yeah, so, I mean, who are the people being attacked in The Purge films?
The minority people, the poor people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a direct attack on them. It's a direct attack of purging the others from society.
Yeah.
It's
But then I guess I don't understand how it's nationalism, you know?
Because it's nationalism. Because nationalism, when we talk about American nationalism, we're talking about white supremacy specifically.
Okay.
That is what American nationalism is. That's what Birth of a Nation is.
Okay.
That's what Red State kind of makes a point for.
Okay.
And that's The Purge. The interesting thing about The Purge is that The Purge started off as a blacks and horror series. But actually, the last one that they made, it was actually made by an all-black crew.
Nice.
A black director. Yeah. So it kind of turned, you know.
Oh, from one to the other is what you're saying?
Yeah.
It started off.
And its evolution.
Okay.
Because even when I always forget who directed The Purge, but the guy, even in the beginning, he's like, honestly, it's not that serious, blah, yeah. blah. But as the films came out, because uh-huh. I think the films get a little bit better as they come out. As the films kept coming out, that's when he started being, that's when the tone started changing.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's also kind of when the time started changing, because The Purge came out in 2013. Like I said,
damn, did you just hit up a Purge date off the top of your head?
I'm a film historian, Clinton. I know when films come out.
Props.
Yeah, the last one.
That was the first Purge.
That was the first Purge.
We've had like 4 or 5 now.
Yeah, so the first black, the one that was directed by the black director uh-huh. and written by the black writers, that was in 2017. That was the Purge American. I think it was
American Election or American.
Yeah, American something. Yeah. But then there was the series, and that was last year.
The series. Yeah. I actually didn't see the series.
I didn't see the series.
I thought I might be hyped for it.
Yeah, I did too. Because it was starring people of color. Yeah.
That's true. Well, that's good. I do feel like they're kind of telling the same story over and over.
They're not really, like I said, I think it got better, but it's not like they're. They're not elevated at all.
If you see one Purge movie and don't see the first one, then you've seen them all. And also, I think you can really enjoy it. I think once you start watching multiples, then you kind of like...
I can't differentiate them. I know that there's one where they show more of the black militia, which I think was kind of cool. But again, the Purge films, while I think they're better than a lot of things that have come out in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, they're fun. And
it's better than the Hostel, like, franchise.
Not to
turn off all of our Hostel listeners.
Well, no, it's kind of apples and oranges, but at the same time, it has a lot more intent. When the guy was like, it's not that serious. Eventually, you know, I think they were, and like I said, 2013 to 2016, I'm pretty sure that's when the last one came out. I mean, 2016 was when everything was going crazy, you know, and then the series came out even after the election.
Yeah.
So, it's very interesting. And I mean, I know that you're probably going to ask in The Witch, like, how does nationalism arise there?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a paranoia out of the norm being disrupted. It's a paranoia out of religious frenzy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that one is more metaphorical, but you definitely can read the nationalist stance into it being like, we don't accept others. So whenever we think of nationalism, we're really thinking of what is being othered here. What is the metaphor? For example, one of the films that we're going to talk about has many different interpretations, one specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Which one? The Wailing.
Okay.
When you Google The Wailing, it's like this giant Reddit thread of, it could be a socio-political argument for this, or it could be an argument for this, or mm-hmm. this, or this. And that's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
But the point at the end of the day is xenophobia is very much entrenched in these narratives one way or another, either challenging xenophobia or how does xenophobia manifest, and how does nationalism manifest, and they manifest very specifically in all three of these films in very different ways.
Well, I think we should get right into it.
Okay, let's get
cracking. Who we getting into first?
So as always, we're going to go chronologically. And so the first
chronologically.
One.
Okay.
Yeah, the first one would be 2011, Kevin Smith.
Oh, no.
What is this? It's like Craigslist for people who want to get laid.
I thought Craigslist was Craigslist for people who want to get laid. Right.
She wants all three of us at the same time.
This is what happens when parents block porn sites, man. They make socially backwards kids.
Bet you boys want to get up to the devil's business, don't you?
Get drinking, because I ain't drinking alone.
I don't let no man near me unless he's got at least 2 beers in.
Yes, ma'am.
Guys, is that you, Travis?
Welcome, family.
Good evening.
Good evening, good evening, Grandpa.
I hate the wickedness of America. Rampant fornication, adultery, abortion, flagrant sexuality, everywhere.
Will somebody please let me out of here?
It's up to the righteous to curb the spread of this disease. You might take children out of there. Gonna get grown up in here.
Send the sinner straight to hell. Send the sinner straight to hell.
God doesn't love you. Let's fear him.
Yes, sir. It's dawn here now, but we can be fully mobilized and on site in an hour.
Come out with your hands up, and you will not be harmed. Repeat, you will not be harmed.
I think it's the use of the word repeat that makes this work every time.
I never saw a hand of God so clearly in all my born days.
Those government people, they're gonna kill you too. You get down on your knees and pray.
You said this was gonna be a simple in and out, sir.
Talk about fear God. I fear God. You better believe I fear God.
How much you think a cross like that costs?
I mean, the dollars are common sense.
All right, and so that was a bit of Red State, directed by Kevin Smith. It came out in 2011. It has a lot of people in it, like Melissa Leo.
Who's that?
She was one of the... She won an Oscar a couple years later for The Wrestler.
Okay.
Yeah. And she's, I think, the mom in it. And John Goodman, who plays a police officer, right? The FBI agent. And yeah, so a lot of people... It's actually more well-known for being a big controversy at Sundance because he's always done...
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, especially at this point. I think now things have changed a lot in the industry, but in 2011, it was like tradition for him to make a film, take it to Sundance, it would be bought. But when he premiered the film at Sundance, at the end of it, he was like, by the way, you can't buy this film. And it pissed off a lot of people because you have distributors not choosing to see other films, not choosing to buy other films.
You're like, you can't even have this.
Exactly.
What was
so
he,
it pissed off filmmakers.
What was his whole thing? What was he doing?
He was kind of like a fuck you to the man. He was like, no, this is...
You can't even buy my film.
No, literally. It was kind of like a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I can see it as a power move.
It is. I mean, that's essentially...
Maybe you build some hype because everyone's like, oh, yeah, the movie that couldn't be bought.
Exactly. I think that's kind of where it was coming from. But
this
movie
today is really, really, really hard to find. It's not on
Amazon.
How
did you watch it?
It's not. You can't even buy it on Apple. Like,
how did you watch it?
You can't get it on any actual streaming service. I had to write it down. I looked. Not on Canopy. Not on Tubi. Not on any single thing. I had to go to Popcorn Flicks.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
And what did you do?
And it's clearly like, you know, sketchy.
Oh,
it's like
okay,
a sketchy,
okay.
You know, maybe, I don't know.
I saw it in theaters.
Oh, right. Well, you saw it in theaters
because
you're a movie maniac. You see all sorts of stuff.
And I know when
but
films come
today,
out.
But today, this movie is like universally shunned.
Honestly, I think it's for the greater good.
Yes, thank you. I was so worried that you were going to come out cabin
nope.
for this movie.
Nope.
This movie
not at
is
all.
Trash.
It's beyond trash.
And I love trash. I was excited
when it was announced because I liked the cast. At the time, Kyle Gallner's in it. At the time, Kyle Gallner was so popular. He was in every single horror film. But I think this was one of the last films he did. And I was excited for the cast. Kyle Gallner.
Who is that? Was that the lead kid?
One of them.
Okay.
It was the gothy looking kid.
Hmm.
Yeah. I hate this movie so much. He's pretty irrelevant now, but like back in the 2000s, he was like,
he was killing it.
The cute horror guy.
I could see that actually. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, and I didn't know Kevin Smith hadn't made a horror film before.
Yeah.
He made one after this called Tusk, which, because I don't like this film, I never saw Tusk. And I hear Tusk is really gross, but maybe one day.
It has to be better than this.
It's a body horror film.
Tusk is.
Yeah, with Justin Long, and I think he turns into a walrus or something.
Okay.
But everyone tells me it's just like unnecessarily gross. And
Kevin Smith.
Yeah. No, but I was honestly excited. I was like, well, you know, he's kind of ridiculous. Maybe he'll make a fun horror film.
Yeah.
This film's not fun.
No, that's perfectly said.
But what it's about, and it's kind of about a lot of different things, but the easy way to start it off is this group of teenagers kind of get catfished to go out in the middle of nowhere to have sex, and instead they kind of meet this religious cult that Kevin Smith says it's not based on the Westboro Baptist Church, but one, they're referenced a lot in it, and two, it's basically like a very extreme Westboro Baptist church.
It's basically the Westboro Baptist
it
church.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so go ahead. Go at it.
I hated it. I hated every second of it. So a couple things. Starting off, if you make a movie with kind of people that are supposed to be from the trailer parks,
right,
they're supposed to be from poor areas and neighborhoods, and they're Southern. Yeah. And if you make a movie about with those people in it, you better be from that area. You better be yourself Southern. You better be yourself poor. And I don't know, maybe if Kevin Smith did grow up that way.
No, New Jersey.
It
hello.
Looks like it reads like a, you know, fancy liberal making a movie about like rednecks is what it kind
right.
of is. It's just really cringy.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning. And that's just a small piece of what I disliked about this movie. I think the moment where I realized I hated this movie was at the first death. There is kind of a horrible execution of a gay man.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I thought, I hate this movie. I don't want to see Kevin Smith, who is a straight white man, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Push the boundaries. Because when a straight white man pushes the boundaries, you have characters like LGBTQ characters getting horrifically murdered.
Yeah.
For no, you know, and there's no, it's not handled in anywhere near the way it would be if it was directed, written by an LGBTQ creator. So I don't want to see a white straight man like Kevin Smith pushing the boundaries. And when I saw him push the boundary that far, I thought, this movie is gonna piss me off every step of the way from here. And it did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I chose this one because it's kind of one of the, it was gonna be this or The Purge. And
I would have loved The Purge in comparison.
But I actually think this is a good one because I think this is a really, it almost proves nationalism in and of itself. It's almost like a commentary in a commentary of a commentary of itself. It's just kind of like it's exactly what you said. It's like this liberal idea of, he himself said that he wanted to push the idea of this extreme, so extreme that it's just like the worst thing ever. And it's just kind of like, why?
The Westboro Baptist kind of thing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, that's, and I told Clinton before we started it, that I often feel like this film is almost more timely to now, even though it's weird. The Westboro Baptist Church has kind of gotten more irrelevant.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's an interesting point. Yeah. Cause they've gotten more irrelevant as probably white nationalism has grown.
Exactly. Because, he really wasn't even, I mean, in a way, I think the Westboro Baptist Church has always hated everything, you know, but I don't know if I would have ever labeled it as a white nationalist group per se. They're just a hate group.
Right.
Period.
They were pretty,
but
it's like hard to keep track because there's so much, you know.
Right. I mean, white nationalists are hateful anyway, but I don't think white nationalists is the focal point of this film. But at the end of the day, it does kind of still keep coming up, especially with the end, with the shootout and the family and all of that. It's just kind of like, what is the message there, you know?
This movie sucked on every level in every way.
Well,
it tried to change, right. It changed into different movies, and right, like there was, it just failed so spectacularly.
Scenes. Right.
There's like long monologues where you're I can't imagine.
I remember the one in the church with the,
oh
with
my
the
God, they make you listen to an entire church sermon.
Yes, I remember that. I told Clinton, it's literally been 10 years since I've seen this film.
Yeah.
And I remember the shootout very well, just because I was like, is this how it's going to end? And then I remember, again, that insane sermon that he gives, because I was like, does Kevin Smith feel this? Because I almost feel like he has to believe some of this on some level, because it was just like... so intense. No, he says.
And I did think the actor was good that played the ringleader.
Yeah, he was good. He was really good. Honestly, the acting in this isn't that bad. Melissa Leo is pretty good.
Yeah, except for some of the like yokel local yuck stuff at the beginning.
Oh yeah, I mean this is just a stereotype. You know, a film full of stereotypes. It's pretty much. It was funny when I was kind of refreshing for this. It's like this film is going to be designed to piss off almost everyone.
Yeah,
you know, it's gonna piss off the conservatives,
it's gonna piss off the Kevin Smith fans, it's gonna piss off people who enjoy movies, because it ends as a procedural. It ends as like a courtroom procedural.
Yeah,
and no one could possibly want that out of a movie to change tone so much. It was so much.
Yeah, no, and so, and here's a direct quote for him from
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, from describing the film. He's like, I wanted to prove that there's no limit to what people will do when they feel entitled, which is kind of the definition in and of itself of nationalism. It's just, I don't, you know, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is, again, the reason why I actually didn't choose The Purge is The Purge doesn't seem to be made with a lot of intention. I've done a lot of research into it, and the guy was like, I just thought it was a cool idea.
Yeah.
But Red State seemed to be something that Kevin Smith thought that he was really going to make this strong statement.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fails so spectacularly. And I really wanted to dissect the many different ways why, and the many different ways, you know, especially when it was made during a different time, mm-hmm. yet in a way it feels more relevant in bad ways now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you stay until the credits?
I started to fast forward.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
And I was like, this is still taking too long.
Yeah.
When I got to the credits, I pieced out harder than I've ever pieced out before.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the credits, he doesn't divide it alphabetical or anything. He divides all the credits between the sex players, the religion players, and the politics players. So even Kevin Smith, at the helm of this film, he thinks that this film is divided into three neat sections,
mm-hmm.
Critiquing all of these different aspects,
as in sex, religion,
and politics. Yeah.
Oh boy. I guess, you know, fine. I wish it was good.
Yeah,
you
know. No.
But I guess, yeah, at the end of the day, you might as well swing for the fences and make something that's weird and divided into three and like a cool concept, you know, even if it doesn't make it. Well, that's fine.
No, yeah, I think I just think this film is as messy as American nationalism even is, you know. I don't think it says anything well. And at the end of the day, honestly, I think there are films that have kind of dealt with nationalism a little bit better. I know that, you know, I may not have been the biggest fan of Us, but it's a pretty direct allegory
to
nationalism.
That.
And like I said, The Purge, even, it's kind of grown to be this big political metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so Red State's just a really, I think it's just like a really direct,
sucks.
It's just a really direct way of saying, yep, we're a racist country and yeah. we're a homophobic country. But that's the thing. He didn't make a message with it. He kind of just knows that like, we're this awful people. And he's like, let's just make a fun film of all of these people killing all the victims.
And then it changes and you're going to be so surprised that it's now a movie about something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except no one's surprised.
That was the worst movie I've seen in the entire Horrorspiria collection.
I knew it was going to.
All right.
Yeah, I knew.
I really thought you might be a secret like Kevin Smith super fan, and I was gonna be walking into like you know.
I don't think I've ever met anyone that wasn't white that loved
Kevin Smith.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost positive. Every single time I've met a Kevin Smith super fan, it's been
they look very... like Kevin Smith, probably.
Actually,
no.
This is where the podcast is going to get diplomatic.
Okay.
Because I actually have some people that might listen to this are actually friends with Kevin Smith.
Friends.
Yeah.
Hey, we can all, you know, make fun of our friends. You know, we all razz each other. We're all friends here.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Kevin Smith, if you're listening, you can still chill. We can still hang out. We're not enemies or anything, you know. you could tell me I suck. You could tell me everything I've ever done sucks. It's cool. We can even that out. You know,
yeah.
At some point.
All right. Well, I think that's good. Oh,
that's it for
did
Red
you,
State.
Did you want to know the alternate ending for Red State?
Well, it like I'm foaming at the mouth at the idea. Like, yeah. I mean, sure. Anything would be better than what it was.
It was going to, are you sure? Because it was literally going to end with the rapture coming.
Yes, that would have been better.
Four men of the apocalypse, whoever it is.
Talk about it, literally. The wrong message, but sure. Even that being like kind of awful in a different way, at least it would have been over. And yeah, it wouldn't have ended in like a John Goodman talks to judges, some courtroom thing. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Are you ready for
what's next?
The wailing?
Yes.
All right. Let's do it.
You're so many bad, Mario. Mushin, you've got no way. You've got. You're so good. You're so good. You're so good. You're so good. You 영원한 생긴 일들아뇨.
여기 다 뭔 일이다냐 그래.
여기서 다 죽었거든.
직접 본 거야?
한번 봤지.
맞는가?
이 뭐가 이제 이거 뭐야 이거?
나왔다.
자네 며칠 전에 만나면 안 되는 것을 만난 적 있지?
아내가 그곳을 건드려 울었어?
똑같아 증상이 사람들 그놈이 자꾸 눈에 빼는 것은 그놈이 자꾸 찾아가고 빼는 것이라 피를 말려 죽이려고
그놈은 그냥 미끼를 던져본 것이고 자네 딸내미는 그곳을 확 물어본 것이오
내 눈깔을 직접 봐야 쓰겠다
So that was a bit of the wailing from Na Hong Jin. It is from South Korea, made in 2016. It was a big success.
Hit.
Yeah, it was a hit in South Korea. It's very Na Hong Jin. This was his first horror, but he had.
That's crazy. But he had what?
Two other Korean films that did well. They were more like Korean dramas. And it's about a policeman sort of investigating a bunch of murders happening in his town. I think that is the really simple way of saying it. There's an American remake scheduled. A British remake scheduled
British.
To be done.
Okay.
I have no idea how they're gonna do that. It's probably gonna be extremely racist. But, you know, I mean, this film was kind of
So, yeah, can we talk about what the... So he's a policeman, and the whole thing is a bit of a... You don't know if you're getting the red herring thing. You see the guy that they're investigating. It takes place in South Korea, like a small town.
I changed my mind like about like 17 times during this film.
Movie was really good with that.
Yeah.
And the main person that you're led to believe could be...
It's a Japanese foreigner.
Is a Japanese foreigner.
Right.
So, yeah. And knowing and watching this, knowing we're talking about nationalism, had me so confused. I was like... Because it seems like it could have that anti-immigrant theme just really up front. Like, the immigrant is the bad guy. But then you don't know if it's a red herring. The whole effing movie, you don't
know.
Yeah,
literally. I mean, on a, as I was telling Clinton, or I think I already mentioned this, like, you spend... up until the last few seconds, and even once the movie ends, you're just also kind of like, but is it this or is it that?
Yeah. I went to the wiki for sure. Yeah.
That's funny.
And a couple of things. This movie is long. Really long.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 2.5 hours or something.
It's 156. So that's
136 minutes. 236. Yeah. So when I saw that length, I was like, wow.
Me too, honestly. Me too. I didn't see this film for the I saw it for my class, actually. When I was first building my syllabus, I was going to screen this film.
Ooh.
So I watched it, and I was like, man, this is going to be a drag. But honestly, it's not a drag. It's just a lot happens.
Yeah, I don't like long movies, but I did love this movie. I chopped it into pieces and came back to it, and I thought it actually worked well. It like I actually chopped it into three parts, and it kind of it goes act to act. So I actually found that to be a good way to consume it.
I watched it all in one sitting.
Yeah, I just it's just so long, but it is it keeps you there, and it's a mystery, and I love the horror mystery.
Yes,
the horror whodunit.
Clinton did say this. He was like, "I love the whodunit kind of types," and it is actually a I would say it's a whodunit.
It's a little bit of a whodunit.
I think even the first hour of this, it's almost like a comic whodunit. And we've mentioned this before. South Korean films have a humor that is just so intrinsic. And that's
even when it's dead serious.
Yeah, even when it's dead serious. I will say, I do think the last 30 minutes of this film was like some of the most intense stuff. I think once... at this point, we're going to start mentioning spoilers.
You're not going to spoil the end, are you?
Not really.
Don't do it.
I was just gonna say when his daughter starts getting symptoms.
Yes.
Yeah, that's when things start, I think, becoming really, really dark.
Okay.
Because leading up to it, it's kind of like dark stuff happens, but it still has like this humorous edge.
Yeah.
But I do think one of the most interesting things is like the last 30, 40 minutes, it takes a sharp tonal shift where it just gets darker and darker and darker, and honestly a lot, you know, I'm not really surprised by films nowadays, not by any virtue, I've just seen a lot of films, but a lot of the twists, though not necessarily unexpected, I was kind of shocked that they went there. Specifically thinking about what happens with the daughter and whatnot. I
the daughter is so cute too.
Yeah, no, I really kind of didn't expect it to go there. And
I think she was cute. Or maybe I'm thinking of a different movie.
No.
Almost a couple of these movies had cute kids.
That's what I'm saying. There was like a really almost like saccharine quality.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not that you never think that these families are infallible, right? But it takes such a dark turn that I was like, oh my gosh, wow, this movie is going hard.
Hard in the paint. The wailing scene, for which it's probably named after, is unlike any scene I've ever seen in a movie before.
I agree.
That scene to me was like, it was like, all right, fine. Yeah. Name the movie after it. Great. Yeah. You know, but it's not even, the town it's just itself, halfway through the movie.
I don't know if you know this, but the town itself actually literally means wailing in Korean. So that's also.
That. I did know that. Just kidding. I did. I definitely did not know that. For the listeners who can't tell.
Right. Yeah. Lying. So I guess let's get into it. So you loved it?
Loved it. I think it's the best whodunit I've ever seen. Actually.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I've probably seen two whodunits.
I can't. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, Seven. I guess I would actually consider Seven a horror film.
Okay.
Wait, is it better than Seven?
I haven't seen Seven, actually. I've only seen the end. What's in the box?
That is the worst.
I was I was younger when it came out, okay? I was impressionable.
Actually, it was rated R. Thinking back on it, I think the ending was spoiled for me, too. But I still watched it. And
yeah.
That's one of my favorite films.
I'm scared of it.
That's kind of messed up. No, yeah, it's like one of those that even I think if it's released today,
it's still
like the crime. Now I realize why you never reacted to a reference I made once.
What was it?
I one time made a reference to the crime for lust.
Uh huh.
And I remember you did not get a reaction, and I'm like.
Wow.
Yeah, because should I just say it? Okay, the crime. So it's I don't know if you remember. It's a guy that kills based on the seven sins.
Uh-huh.
So for lust, he kills a prostitute by fucking her.
Wow! Oh my god!
With a knife dildo.
That sounds exactly like another movie. That sounds like a couple other movies we've seen.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't show it, but they kind of show the instrument, and it's this giant. It's like I said,
no likey.
To this day, I'm still like scarred by it. Especially because I saw it when I was young. So
yeah, that's why I didn't see it. Okay, and I've been fine until now.
That's only one of them. There's like
I know. It's okay. I'm good with that one.
I love that film. Anyway, So a lot of crazy things happen. So it's a whodunit, but it's also a ghost film.
Story.
Yeah.
Film.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing. There's just many interpretations to this, but most directly, as Clinton said, there is kind of like you walk into this and you know that there's this Japanese foreigner in a South Korean town. And already, we already mentioned this in the Korean horror podcast, but for those that didn't listen to that episode, Korea and Japan have a very tense relationship. Even right now, they're like arguing over some islands and the control of the South China Sea. But this all started with Japanese occupation in the early 19th century. And it's, you know, Japanese films have dark dark views towards Koreans. Korean films have dark views towards the Japanese. And as Clinton says, it's a film that as it plays out, you never even really know what the interpretation is. But here's one thing that is fact. It is one of South Korea's most popular films. And it does kind of exhibit an increased awareness of xenophobia towards the Japanese. And the reason why I chose it is I think it does that in a very unique way through the metaphor of all of the different ghosts or presences that are present. And you can either be literal, you can look at it as it's all of these different ghosts, and this ghost means this and this ghost mean that. But some people even think that the ghost aspect wasn't real, that it was just like the sickness, and that it did have to deal with these different shamans and stuff.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
shaman battles were pretty awesome.
So what do you think? What do you think about the whole, like, after you watched it, especially through the lens of nationalism?
I'm still struggling with the nationalism thing, because I don't know what to think about the. Well, I can't say, I don't want to say anything about the ending, and thus.
You not wanting to talk about the ending is not.
No, we can't do it. But I love the movie.
So
I mean, essentially at the end there's
this, don't you dare,
there's this kind of battle between these different
spirits. No I say we don't even, it wraps up, you're talking about like the last 5 minutes.
I don't think that's a big spoiler.
It's a huge spoiler.
All right, I will. Okay, these different ideologies kind of all come to a head. So, since Clinton is
really being sneaky about it now,
since Clinton is being really strict about me not giving away the ending,
you got to abstract a little bit.
You know, the Japanese foreigner is involved in a very specific way. The policeman's prejudices are involved in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people / spirits. It's never quite, I mean, again, this is the part that's open to interpretation, that also are involved with how all of these things unfold. And I think the nationalism part comes up through these attitudes towards the foreigner and the history that comes with it, because it's not accidental. It's very purposeful. And there have been some people that compare the Mu Myung.
That's the director of this.
No, that is the no name character, the female character. I think you
got it.
Yeah, she literally means no name in Korean. In Korean. Okay. And they also say she's a direct reference to the president at the time, who was Park
Yuan-hyun. Oh, for real?
Yeah, exactly. Because the president at the time, who was later impeached, and I think she was sent to jail.
That's really something I would not expect.
Yeah, she was involved with the Eternal Life Church, which is known for doing shaman practices similar to the whaling. Yeah.
Wait. This was a South Korean president, like recently.
Yeah, don't you remember?
No.
Yeah, this was back in 2016. She was impeached, and I want to say she's in jail. If she's not, and she was definitely impeached, but there was like just mass protests and things like that.
Oh, okay. I do remember hearing something about that.
Exactly. Yeah, years ago. That was, So, you know.
And so that character was sort of maybe inspired by that, or has some...
a reference. Okay. And I mean, because that character, the no-name character, has a very important part later on.
Maybe she does.
She does. I don't think it's a spoiler. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So I mean, it's really just how these different things intersect. And I think, you know, actually Korea, like I said, Korea and Japan both have a history of throwing shots at each other. And there are films that are much more explicit than this, but I really like, one, the modern take, to the, you know, just as a film, it just evolves so interestingly.
This, masterfully done.
Yeah. And it's very culturally specific. Yeah. That's why I think the idea of a remake is especially very stupid.
Get it out of here. Yeah, man. Because. And why?
Because the Japanese horror, it's very specific. And so if you're trying...
South Korean horror.
Yeah. And then if you're trying to adapt that to Britain, what? You're going to make it an Indian? Like, how are you going to do it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, you could do it.
This is a film that does not need to be remade. No, because it is so culturally specific that any kind of remake of it just completely loses half
of
its value.
Something. You're gonna lose something for sure.
Yeah, most of the value of that. And don't remake a three-hour film. Also, like,
don't you dare. Yeah, don't you dare. I could see this making into a miniseries. But I mean, it's already made. It's a movie. Go see it.
Yeah, no, it's hard to, I really love this, and Under the Shadow are two of my favorite films, just period.
Yeah.
And they actually came out within months of each other, so interesting.
Cool.
It's on Netflix.
It was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is. I think it might have gone off at the beginning of June.
Oh, that
my
sucks.
Netflix had a little warning at the bottom. It was like, this is gonna be gone soon. But it's worth spending the money on, so drop $5 on that.
Yeah.
Get that whaling.
Yeah, so I
pencil out a weekend where you can just watch all those minutes.
Final thoughts?
Kevin Smith, eat shit.
All right. Okay, we have one more. Are you ready?
I'm ready, because this movie, speaking of shit, this movie scared the shit out of me.
All right.
진짜.
خانه ازامن کنن ایلام.
اینجا که درست وسط جنگه.
خودتو بری من میترسم.
نداره عزیزم. تو تا چشم به هم بزنی من برگشتم.
دیگه نایمده همینجور بیاد بالا سر ما.
مطمئنم به خودش یه چیزایی آورده.
اینا بابان هر جا بریم یه دنبالت.
دارن جمع میکنن از شهر میرن.
ما هم از جمع کنیم بریم.
نه نمیشه، کسی برش داشته.
کی برش داشته؟ هیچ کی برش نداشته جز من و تو. هم هیچ کی توی این خونه نیست.
یه از شهرشون در امان نیستیم.
که اونا دارن میان.
So that was a bit of Under the Shadow, which is from 2016, directed by Babak Anvari, and it's from Iran. He is British-Iranian, so he was born and he even lived in Tehran. Then he went to school in Britain. I think that's how that went.
Okay.
And so it's about this woman and her daughter and kind of her husband during the Cultural Revolution in Iran in the 1980s in Tehran specifically.
Yeah, which is a super interesting part of their history, of world history. And I did see on Twitter you shared a little GIF from Persepolis.
I did today.
Which is also about it's actually the Iranian Revolution.
Iranian. Yes. Yes, no, it actually takes place around basically the same time. Yes.
Yeah.
But this one is specific to Tehran. Eventually, the husband kind of leaves very early to go fight in the war.
Okay.
And then, so it's basically a mother-daughter kind of story from there.
Yeah, and it is a bit of like a survival horror. I think right. One of the things is... movie does masterfully, and not to overuse that term masterfully, but there's these movies really deserve it.
Yeah.
Is that so to me there's this archetype of the haunted house and right. People move in and the house is haunted, and kind of the joke is like, well, why don't they just move? And so they have to construct some reason why they don't move, and it's haunted, and so people slowly go crazy and it's scary. But it's not that scary because we've seen it so many times before. This does almost the opposite, where first you have the husband there, then the husband has to leave. Then, you know, there's this war conflict breaking out. So then the neighbors leave. And one by one, she gets more and more isolated. And then there's some freaking haunted spirits or something.
Jinns.
Thank you. And so it's almost this reverse haunted house where she can't leave. Everyone's gone. Everyone leaves her. And she just has this beautiful, adorable child. And shit really hits the fan.
Really affected by the djinn specifically. She keeps saying, I see the djinn. And the mother is like, they don't exist. Shut up.
Yeah. And she's trying to hold it together.
Yeah, no.
There's the tension of the... the war, the missiles.
There's so many layers in this film. It's a feminist film. It's a film about family. It's a film about directly about nationalism and how the Iranian Revolution shamed independent women. And because that keeps going back and forth the whole time when she wants to go ahead
and
go study.
Every time she tries to break out you feel the claustrophobia, the walls caving in.
The patriarchy, and also how it felt for the Cultural Revolution to happen. Mm-hmm. I remember this film, I think, is very dear to me specifically because of Delia.
Delia,
my best friend.
Gotcha.
You know, this is also one of her favorite films. And every single time, whenever we talk about this film, she always tells me this is... remember the scene when they go out? It's one of the scenes when they're out in Tehran and they're shaming the mom for not having her hijab on?
Yeah.
My best friend would tell me that, like, that would happen to her mom all the time.
Really?
You know, when the revolution, because they, my best friend's family immigrated during the revolution. They immigrated to Germany, then they went to America. And she would tell me this is what would happen to my mom all the time. They would just hound her, you know, saying, your hijab's not on right. Why aren't you wearing your hijab? And you know, in the first two movies, in Red State and in The Wailing, we kind of have a very specific other, right? We have the gay others or everything that's not the conservative cult others. Mm-hmm. And you have the Wailing.
Japanese immigrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's more direct in the sense that it's an attack on...
The other is the...
The woman.
The woman.
The freedom. Yeah. And also... it's just a very straight metaphor for the Iranian revolution. I mean, at one point, the djinn literally takes the shape of a hijab, you know?
Yeah, and that was amazing.
Yeah, no. And,
ooh,
and
that was some holds horror superior. Boom. Recommends. This is one of the moments of, you know, when we make our clip reel.
So culturally specific.
Yeah.
So nationally specific, you know. And again, this is a film that came out only a few years ago. It's set in the 80s. It's set during a very specific time for a reason. And I think probably out of all of the films.
When was the Cultural Revolution? Was it 70s,
1979
80s? 79.
Into it.
So man, again, with the facts. It's not just The Purge. She remembers real life
I'm
things,
glad
too.
That I am a good professor. Otherwise,
you are.
Fire me. No, yeah. So I think...
Your tenure here at Horrorspiria University.
Right. I think out of all of the films on this list, Under the Shadow is the most... it makes the most complete sense. Like, you see it so clearly and it's just done so well. Mm-hmm. And again, it's such a beautifully feminist film, which honestly for male directors is kind of very
hard. That's pretty... Yeah.
But Babak specifically, I mean, he was raised by his mom and he said, like, this film is for my mom, you know?
Yeah.
And he had the experience of living in Tehran during this time, so you know it was personal, and you can tell this film is so personal and beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful film.
It does have those personal touches that just bring it to life.
Right
there, the mom is, you know, like a lot of young moms, just trying to just keep it together, and she's taking care of her kid, and she's trying to exercise, so she's watching this like Jane Fonda exercise tape.
Yeah.
And it's a small detail, but
it
makes
a lot.
It so real.
Especially when the Cultural Revolution was about getting everything Western out, you know.
Right.
And the truth is, for those of you that don't know much about Iran's history, you know, first off, go watch a documentary or read a book. It's very important.
Go read a book.
Because, I mean, especially with what's happening right now with U.S. sanctions, you know, Iran definitely is complicit in abusing its people, but you know, the America literally sent, you know, spies during the Cultural Revolution to help overthrow the monarchy.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and you know, what do sanctions do but hurt the people?
No,
of Iran?
And they do. No, yeah. So I mean, yeah. You know, these things are just as relevant as they are. But I mean, before the Cultural Revolution, mm-hmm. Iran was one of the most westernized countries in the world. You mm-hmm. know, it was a formidable, it was one of the upcoming, you know, great powers. And then the revolution happened mm-hmm. and Iran kind of came to be as
Went
we
a
know
different
it.
Way.
A very different way. Yeah.
I, you know, I'm not big on the books. I don't read a lot of books, but I did read Persepolis, which is one of my favorite graphic novels. And Have you read that?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if
it does a great job.
That's a great job. Yeah.
Yeah. And the film is just, I mean, because it's done by the same, it's done by Marjane as well. She did the film as well. So, oh, I mean,
the film Persepolis?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to see that. Is it good?
It is. It, I mean, it's basically straight.
Straight from it.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So, cool. I mean, if you love the book, you're going to love the movie.
I did love it.
She did it. She directed the, okay, the cool. movie as well. So. Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, that's, you
this,
know.
This movie was the scariest movie I've ever seen as an adult, too. I had to stop yeah. it. I was watching it in bed.
Well, can I ask you why you found it so scary?
Well, I was in my bed right. and I was watching it. And I guess we just watched like The Host recently, you know.
Right.
We watched some other weird stuff, but you know, it wasn't, it was kind of skating by with some kind of funny stuff. And this was so tense. I was getting just such scary vibes. I was like, I'm not going to be able to sleep in this bed if I continue this movie. And nothing, I don't even think anything had happened yet. It was just the threats, the threat of the missiles, the war, and knowing that yeah. something spooky was kind of underfoot.
Right.
Some movies, they try to build the tension and nothing happens and it's boring. This movie does it and it, boom, it got me right in there.
That's amazing. I think the last film like that like deeply scared me, like not being able to sleep, was Paranormal Activity, which is kind of funny. But I think it was just the idea of like something watching you when, and because I always sleep alone and yeah. I think back then.
Well,
right. Yeah, exactly. So like there was a very long time, like I want to say a period of a year where like I literally have like a nightlight and,
oh yeah.
And if I felt a presence, I would like look up. But otherwise, yeah, I don't, like things disturb me, but I don't know if I have like horror based nightmares anymore. I think just because I look at horror films now just kind of like through such an academic eye. I still have a lot yeah. of fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, even seeing this film, but yeah, I think that's why Dila called you that name, because yeah. this is one of her favorite films, but I don't think she thinks it's like.
She doesn't think it's that scary.
And a lot of.
Being scared is a weird experience, too. No, I think honestly, it has a lot yeah. to do with like your current mental state. Did yeah. I eat recently? Am yeah. I alone?
Yeah.
Am I.
Yeah, you know, no.
X, Y, and Z.
Actually, like usually the films that scare me, quote unquote, the most are like home invasion films.
Oh, I can see that. Because I'm always yeah.
home alone.
Right. It's the most. That fear is probably the most.
Yeah. Relatable. When I lived in Orlando, I had my own house and I had a glass door, and I was always I couldn't see any horror films in that house. Honestly, yes. Because yeah. I was always like. Someone's walking up to my door, because you know, the when you think about it, doors are such flimsy things, like yeah. unless you have like five deadbolts on it,
right?
If someone really wants to get in the door,
they could just
they'll get in a door. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so it's interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, no, but I love this film. I think it's fitting also to end on it, because I think it's again one of the ones that really show a form of nationalism that hurt its own people in a very beautiful metaphorical way, mm-hmm. but also a real way.
Yeah.
You know, whether you stayed in Iran or you didn't, the scars of the Cultural Revolution have carried through mm-hmm. throughout generations. I mean, like I said, this film was made in 2016 and things are still going on in Iran in a very sad way, both by its own government and through Western intervention, like
mm-hmm.
our own.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep, yep. Yeah, watch this movie. It is a crisp, crisp watch. I think it's like 90 minutes or something.
Oh, yeah. It goes by super quick.
Ooh, no, it doesn't. It gets you. It's that heart racing.
I think it goes by really quick, yeah.
It had me stressed, but in a good way.
Did you watch it in one sitting?
No, I had to stop so I could go to
sleep.
Oh,
right. Yeah, you told me.
I had to quit and then try again. But I got right back in there. I did wonder maybe if I quit, like, you know, is the tension going to be lost? No. Started watching it again. And I was so scared the second time, I had to start making noises. I had to start commentating to just release some of that energy, you know?
That's good.
So something happened. I was like, good. No, no. You know, like I was out there letting it out so that it didn't go inside and stay inside.
The gins.
The gins.
Yeah, the gins. And so to speak on that, gins are Muslim ghosts, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, so they are ghosts, but they're very specific to the Islam religion.
Is it spelled like D-J-I-N?
N.
N, okay.
Perfect. Cool. Good. Cool. Yeah, gin.
Gin.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I think that this was a nice little breeze through. This is probably going to be our shortest episode ever.
Whoa.
That's a nice little breeze through a very interesting theme.
Done
through
dun, dun, dun.
The eye.
Nationalism.
Yeah. And I mean, this is like I said, we cut the devil's backbone. But you know, that's one. The Last Circus is actually another.
Oh my God. Have you watched it yet?
I haven't.
We should watch it together.
We should watch it together.
That's the best Spanish Civil War movie.
Yeah, no. Movie. No, yeah. I mean, that one,
That one's probably big old nationalism stuff going on there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm about to say.
I mean, I don't know what you're going to say. I don't know why, you know.
When I was reading the article, it literally was using Last Circus as
No way. Was it?
Yeah.
The Last Circus is mentioned in an article? Or an article you're gonna write?
No, it was in the book. It was in the book.
What book?
The book I told you that this whole episode.
What is this episode listeners... about? What's the book?
Listeners, you're listening. You know.
Maybe
what
you've been listening
about.
Better than I have. Can you tell me one more time?
Yes, the idea that I got for this podcast or this episode was from a book on Latin American horror films, and it mentioned Spain as an example of nationalism.
That mentioned Last Circus.
It did.
It's in a book.
Yes, it's in a book.
That's amazing.
It's not as obscure as you think. It's a very famous film. Yes.
Okay. Great.
Alex de las Iglesias is a very famous, especially in the genre market, because again, Spanish language genre cinema does not really, you know, it's not really a permeate. Itive thing.
I don't know if that was a word, but
yeah, permeative.
You kind of made it into it.
Permeation.
Anyway,
so yeah, no, I think we might even revisit this again. You know, there's. I'm always looking at things coming out. And
Red State 2.
Don't even want like Kevin Smith. Don't make.
Don't get any ideas.
Please.
All his friends are listening. Don't
tell him about this. It's going to be based on the Proud Boys.
Oh, God. Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's too scary, you know?
Yeah, I don't.
It's like, just turn on the news. There it is.
I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe go
to the Washington Mall, you know, and see people with red hats on. It's will get you real fired up.
Yeah.
Speaking of Marshmallow, July 4th is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
I think Trump's going to be doing something nationalistic at that 4th of July event, and I'll be there. I'm going to be protesting.
Are you going to protest?
I'm pretty
real?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It's going to be scary. You know?
Well, yeah. Wasn't it last year? I think it was last year. I'm pretty sure it was last year that they arrested the guy that was planning a terrorist attack on July 4th at the National Mall.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
You remember
that,
though, right?
That was a thing.
That was a thing.
It's hard to remember. There's so much.
Honestly,
know?
Yeah. I mean, there was just that. I mean, this wasn't a terrorist attack, but like the guy on the White House lawn.
Oh, that set himself on fire.
Protest. I mean, yeah. You know, it's funny. I will tell you, listeners, this. As someone that... not raised in this area, not from this area. I mean, I'm probably gonna live here the rest of my life, maybe.
Wow, we get mad.
But I don't know if I'll ever consider this home, because I always look at it as like an outsider's perspective. But one thing that I'm shocked with upon living in the DMV area is that since everything happens here, it's almost like you're more tuned out of it, because it's like it's 20 minutes away, you know, or it's like 10 minutes away. Though I will say everyone is a lot more civically engaged, and I love that. That's how you know, that's honestly how I got to trust Clinton, and you know, that's how I was able to go to Texas with some lawyers to work at the border. I did that last year. I worked at Karn City helping the families, migrant families that have been separated, you know. So there's so much outpouring, and everyone here basically works for a nonprofit or adjacent to a nonprofit. But at the same time, there's also just this sense that it's your neighborhood. So it's almost just kind of like, you know, I barely pay attention to what Trump is doing. And it's always some bullshit every day. And it's, you know, like at the National Mall lawn, which I drive by once a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's as Clinton says, so much happens that you're just kind of like, wow.
I absorb every single bit of it.
Yeah, I mean, but you were raised here. Bit. You were raised
well,
here.
Yeah.
And
I also
feel like that gives you a different worldview.
Yeah, yeah. I also think that I do it purposefully because I don't want anything to get past me. I want to know every single thing that's happening so that I can always say that I was there, I was aware, and I was fighting back in some way.
And it was that tweet that, I think you liked it today, but I saw it today. It was that tweet where it's like, right now there's migrant families literally being sent to Japanese internment camps.
Yeah.
And it's like, we have such an idea that, oh, I know what's going, if that were to happen, if the Holocaust were to happen today or Japanese internment camps were to happen today, I know what I would do. We're living in that time now. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's not a fact of tuning out at all, because it's so important to stay involved. And I mean, a large reason why I wanted to do this is, again, nationalism is such, I mean, nationalism has always existed. Just because it's more mainstream now doesn't mean that there weren't communities severely affected by this. Let's look at the indigenous communities of America, for example, you know, non-white communities in America. But you know, just, it's good to be aware of, one, what is happening in the media industry, and two, always be aware of how you can help in this mess. Because we can only help if we help out each other, and a way to help is through media, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And not making red states.
Right.
Make the anti-red state.
Make something better, which isn't that hard. I can't imagine it's that hard.
I'm pretty sure my film is better than red state.
Hell yeah.
All right. Okay. Any final thoughts?
My final thought is, this has been a wonderful,
of course,
time spent with you. How long are we on this episode? How long have you gone for?
We this is, again, probably going to be one of our shortest episodes. I just rambled about nationalism for 10 minutes,
still,
and it's 1:16.
Perfect.
Yeah. Your mom's going to be happy. It's a short one.
Oh yay, mama! I don't even know if she's listening anymore. We might have gotten too dark for Mama James, but Papa James, I think, is still listening.
I like how you said no last names, and finally you just give
it's
away
out there. My first name's Scary. My middle name's Clint. And my last name's James. So
I think the first thing I told Clinton when I met him was like, oh, you have two. You have like two first names.
Yeah.
Your name.
I've actually got a third middle name.
No. And then you said that. Yeah. This is literally a conversation we had. And I was like, oh, you have three names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But listeners, you'll never know.
No, I even forgot them because it weirded me out.
I'll probably say it at some point. But yeah, this has been an awesome, wonderful time. And our next episode is going to be a surprise to the listeners.
Yeah.
And we're going to deliver that for you.
Yeah,
and
I'll probably be moving and stuff. So yeah, but no, yeah, we'll definitely be delivering on a note, just as long as no more people die.
Or no more people die. No more animals die.
Then we're
all here, and Horrorspiria marches on.
If Clinton dies, I'm going to die. Just putting this on the podcast.
Just, well, I am going to be in July 4th protest, you know. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
All right. It's a scary world out there,
you
listeners.
You can subscribe and rate to us.
Subscribe and write. I Instant Messenger.
I wish.
Or
I
am,
used to.
Is I think what you were saying.
I am at Gothaina on the socials.
I'm at Clintopio. I haven't seen anybody. No one's talking to me. It's probably
We get followers on our Instagram.
Okay, Horror Spirit. Check that Horror Spirit.
Yeah, we just don't do well with updating it. But I listen, if you follow us on Instagram and you're listening to this and you do our Instagram, I see you guys. I appreciate it so much. Social media is just a hard one, man.
It is.
It's just like it's a lot of I don't know how influencers do it.
I keep saying they've got the hardest job in America right now. I keep saying I'm going to post to the Instagram, but I can't think of anything clever. I'm out of my
The video clips like said, are good. It's just influencer. You know, downloading them, and
it's a lot of work. That's they don't make.
We're being honest with you guys. It's actually difficult to run
an empire, the Horror Spirit empire.
For all the tens of you that listen,
heavy is the head that wears the crown. That's like you. That's your head.
That's enough. All right, guys. I'm going to go hug Clinton now.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. We'll talk to you another time.
Bye.